Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the March 2nd meeting of the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. We do have the minutes from March 1st before us. Representative Johnson B., would you move the minutes, please?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes.
Thank you. Any discussions, additions, or corrections? Representative Hansen, you had an issue on the minutes the other day, and I think that's been cleared up, so thank you.
Yes.
I mean, in regards to...
And maybe just for the record, because I think as we get into time here where there's multiple committee meetings and people might get caught of being presenting a bill somewhere else, that if someone, and we had a Representative Metzler who was here in the morning and then wasn't here for the vote, that my understanding of what we have to do is just say for the record that they're excused or that they're gone for a reason. So 20 years from now, somebody looks back and says, well, how come you didn't vote on that? It's recorded somehow.
And we checked with smart people to make sure we're doing things correctly, and I'm very confident that the way the minutes have been recorded are correct. So with that, members, the minutes for March 1st, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. We have a number of things on our list for today, and I do want to mention early on that there have been some people who have contacted us really quite late to testify, I believe on House File 1466, and if time is such that we will be running a stopwatch and we'll be limiting your testimony time, just so you know that. It's helpful for those people who are interested when we get things posted. And I realize that everyone's busy, but the sooner you can notify the committee administrator, the more likely it is that you'll have a better opportunity to testify. But be that as it is, the first bill before us today is House File 1293. This is an agency bill. Ms. Gauthier, I'm sorry. Oh, there you are. You're hiding. You're camouflaged this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members.
Good morning. So I would like to move House File 1293 to be re-referred to the General Register. So with that, Ms. Gauthier, would you like to proceed, please?
Thank you.
And we have had this bill at Ag. We're at Ag Policy or Ag Finance? Ag Policy. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill has been heard in the House Committee on Agriculture Policy and was passed to this committee. This is this bill would renew and extend for 5 years an existing ban on MPCA permitting of the construction of new open-air swine manure pits. So the history of this is that in 2002, the legislature enacted this ban. So it was a five-year ban at that time and expired in 2007. It was reenacted by the legislature in 2007 for 5 years and reenacted again in 2012 for 5 years. And now the current ban expires on July 1st of 2017. This bill would simply, on line 1.12, extend the ban for 5 more years to the year 2022. Mr. Chairman, this is one of many actions that brought about, kind of came out of, if you will, the end of the feedlot wars. And so what this bill did is it said that new construction of open-air swine manure basins was banned. So it did not impact existing basins, open air basins, but just new ones. So there hasn't been a problem that we're aware of in the past 5 years, and we simply want to keep this in place out of respect to the number of things that brought about the end of the feedlot wars. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have staff here who can answer detailed questions.
Sure.
And I'm happy to take any that members may have. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier, so 1293 deals with swine basins. Have there been any cattle basins or any other liquid manure proposals that have come in, or is this, are we seeing any proposals from other types of livestock for this size of basin?
Ms. Gallagher.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many permitted open-air basins we have for other types of livestock, but I can get that information if that is what you would like, Representative Hansen. I need clarification. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, if you could provide that information to the committee, that's all I'm interested in.
And to that point, Representative Hansen, I would say I'm not aware of any bills that have been brought forward or been referred to this committee that would do any of that. And we are not, just for the record, we are not draining the swine basin swamps here either, so illegally. Any other questions, members? Okay, so then with that, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 1293 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next up, a little change in the order of events here. Representative Garofalo has House File 1355. And I will move House File 1355 to be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability. And there is an amendment, and I will move the amendment, the A1 amendment, page 1, line 9, after the word by, insert, or required to be paid to. So to the amendment, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, the amendment is adopted. We now have the bill in the form that the author would like. Representative Garofalo, Chair Garofalo, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good morning. Members of the committee are familiar with the Volkswagen settlement money as a result of the violations that they admitted to guilt regarding the emissions cheating they were doing. What this bill does is quite simply is that it makes sure that the legislature is going to be involved in that process. There are separate pots of money. What this does is it simply says when that the MPCA, the authorizing agent, for applying for those settlement funds, this is going to require them to work with the legislative branch. It's not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's not a liberal or conservative issue. It's a checks and balances issue between the executive and legislative branches. I suspect that given the very narrow uses that the settlement money allows, I think there's a great opportunity to work together on this. But again, it's a matter of checks and balances, and I would ask for member support, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Mr. Thornton, Commissioner, would you come to the witness table as well, please, at this time? Yeah. We got the little fives going up here. Introduce yourself, or identify yourself for the record, please, and then we'll go to member questions.
Yes, thank you. My name is David Thornton. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you for being here. Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grafko, this is your first time before this committee. Did you adhere to our tradition?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Neuberger, this is not my first time to this committee. Maybe my first time to this committee since you've been here.
Other questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo. You talked about checks and balances between the executive and the legislative, but it seems that the judicial check is maybe the most prominent here. It was my understanding that we really, either the executive or the legislative, couldn't really mess with the trust. Could you maybe describe where our authority comes with the settlement, how either the executive or the legislative can appropriate the dollars if it's by court decree on what it should be spent for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, certainly we could not violate the agreements of that settlement. There are certain, Mr. Thornton can elaborate on what the permissible uses are. So there's a strike zone that these funds are allowed to be used for. we could not use these settlement dollars for, say, a Robert Street corridor expansion, for example. We couldn't use it for that. However, there are many different options that are presented to us in terms of being able to mitigate the emissions as a result of the Volkswagen cheating. And so, for example, whether we would allow electrification of buses or conversion of buses to natural gas, you know, that's items, something along the lines of, you know, what are permissible ways to reduce emissions. And we want to work with it, and we want to work with the executive branch. You know, Assistant Commissioner Thornton's great to work with. But again, once the legislative session adjourns, they're certainly going to be listening to us, but they're not required to do anything. And that's the intent of this bill. If it's blunt force trauma legislation, I recognize that. But if there's another way to do it legislatively so that we are involved in the process, I'm all ears.
Dr. Hansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, you know, Minnesotans would be concerned. Our record on the legislature's record on this is not very good. When let's take, for example, the tobacco settlement, where, you know, that was stolen and used for other purposes. So I'm hoping with this fraud, or as you reference, is cheating money, that it goes for its intended purposes, because of the consequence of that fraud or cheating, Minnesotans should be able to respect where the dollars go for its intended purpose.
And Representative Groff. Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative, you're suddenly younger and better looking, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen,
proceed with caution.
Well, I just lost my hearing, didn't I? And Assistant Commissioner Thornton can elaborate on this, but I don't know of any way we would be allowed to use the money for anything other than the permissible uses. There is no way to do that. So I agree with you.
Follow up. It's not the first time you've agreed with me. Yeah.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Garofalo, you didn't answer the fundamental question here, and that's the separation of powers question. So, and we have in our Constitution, the separation of powers is black and white. The Constitution tells us exactly what the legislature can do and exactly what the courts can do, exactly what the administration can do. So here we have something coming from the courts. And my question then for the witness is, did the court say that this was to be spent by the legislature, or how did the court tell Minnesota what was to happen?
Representative Garofalo, it sounded like there might have been a question in there for you, but I'll let you fight it out with the testifier and see who wants to go.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, David Thornton from the Pollution Control Agency. Actually, the settlement only refers to the state and the governor, and the governor's responsibility is to apply on behalf of the state to be a beneficiary, and the money comes to the state. We do have a couple of concerns with Representative Garofalo's approach here, understanding that his desire is to get the legislature involved in this process. Our two concerns are that I think that this would delay our ability to start making use of this money by as much as a year, because we are not ready to identify an amount of funds and a use of them at this point in time, and probably won't be until well after session. So it will end up coming back next year to do this. And so that's a concern. And the other concern is that the court in the settlement requires the state to, prior to requesting the funds, shows that it has the full legal authority to receive and or direct such funds. And we're concerned that by being required to have an appropriation, have the money appropriated to us, an action that will not have occurred when we're applying for the funds, it may put us in danger of being an eligible beneficiary. So we're trying to figure out how we can address our two concerns about timing and being an eligible beneficiary, as well as Representative Garofalo's interest in having the legislature involved. We don't have the fix at hand yet, but we're working on it.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lugini has hit on some of my questions. My main concern is we talk a lot in this committee about efficiency and the speed at which we can get money out to those who should have the funds. And, you know, we talked about this settlement. I don't think Representative Garofalo was here, but back in January we had a hearing and discussed it fully, and it was really clear that it really was a limited number of things that we could spend this money on. And so my concern is also that you know, it may not even be legal or, you know, constitutionally okay for us to try to get involved with a court settlement that's already finalized. And then I'm also concerned about, you know, we're kind of micromanaging the agencies when they're kind of just a pass-through, and it's really up to the trustee whether the money is an appropriate way of meeting the agreement. And you talked a little bit about the speed of getting the funds and how this would slow things down. Since this is a national settlement, you know, it wasn't just Minnesota. Would we risk those funds being allocated somewhere else if things get tied up too long?
I'm not sure if we have a lawyer present, but Assistant Commissioner.
You. Mr. Chairman, committee members,
he may want to call one down then.
Can you give you our understanding of how that would work? That if there are eligible entities, which would also include tribes, that do not either apply for or qualify for the amount of funds that have been set aside for them, our understanding is that after a couple of years it goes back into the pot, and those that have become eligible are can apply for that. So actually we're kind of hoping that will happen, and we'll be able to come back later and get more money than the $47 million that has been identified for the state. But this is the concern that we want to try to address and move carefully on.
Yeah, Representative.
And I guess for Representative Garofalo, just because this is kind of a blunt instrument, you know, I understand the concern of wanting to make sure that it's distributed fairly. Are there any specific reasons we're not able to trust the agency to do this?
Representative Garofalo.
I said specifics. You know, is there a specific thing you don't want the money spent on?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, and we've met. You know, for example, right now, there's a lot of marketing going into alternative energy. That's maybe not substantive. Let me give you an example. There are now charging stations for electric vehicles outside of some new grocery stores. And they have them up there. They're very prominently displayed. And a lot of times they receive government assistance for those. The practical application of those, of the vast majority of time, they're not used. They're more for marketing the private enterprise than they are providing emissions reductions. There are far better ways, and that's one of the eligible technologies of the settlement. My concern is that you're going to see a focus on charging stations that may not be, that would have interests other than emission reductions. And I say this as an EV owner, with the exception of fast charging stations, with the exception of at-home charging stations, putting money into charging stations, in my opinion, may look popular, maybe nice marketing, but substantively it doesn't work. That's a concern that would be an example of a concern. It's not a matter of trust with the MPCA. It's not the issue. The question is making sure that the legislature is involved in the decision-making process as well as the executive branch. It's not about, I don't view this as the legislature imposing its will on the executive branch or vice versa. It's about designing a system where we're collaborative, where we need each other's approval to move forward on this. And if there's another way to accomplish that, again, I recognize this bill is blunt force trauma right now. I get it. If there's an alternative way to do that, then I'm open to it.
Representative Becker Finn, follow up.
Yeah, just to clarify, so money that comes out of a settlement that has already been finalized, it isn't the same as money that comes from the general fund or comes from other places. And so, you know, I get that we have to, the branches all have to work together, but this is a little bit different scenario. And then a question for you would be, would the MPCA be putting controlling pollution above marketing? I assume if it's that obvious, that it would also be obvious to our experts on pollution control.
Assistant Commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee members. Well, we haven't really gotten that far in how we would judge uses of this money, but and you should know that we're in the midst of having some public meetings to get input on that and an open public comment period. But our thinking at this point is that we would develop some criteria by which we would judge applications for use of the money. And I would imagine that one of the criteria would be the emission benefits that would result from the proposal. And to represent Garofalo's example, you know, I agree completely. A charging station of that type sitting out in front of a grocery store is not going to do that much good for the environment. And so not having developed the criteria, I can't say whether it would or wouldn't get funded, but I have my doubts.
Members, we have one more testifier. I'm going to quickly bring her down if that's possible.
Hey, just one quick.
Can I? We're going to have a couple of questions. We can come back to this. I want to make a mistake on this name, and I apologize, but I'm going to try, and you can identify yourself for the record. Lily, maybe. Please identify yourself for the record.
Members of the committee, my name is Lely Fadahi, and I'm the co-owner and principal of Apparatus. We're a Minnesota public benefit corporation that works to advance research to facilitate dialogue and to catalyze action at the nexus of science, technology, health, and the environment. My organization is facilitating a number of public-private community collaborations across the state that focus on the intersection of issues like transportation and the environment. And we and a number of our collaborators are deeply concerned with the implications of this bill, not because we are so much concerned that the legislature would appropriate the money in a manner that we would find objectionable, but because the terms of the consent decree that establishes this environmental mitigation trust makes it possible, if not probable, that Minnesota would essentially be disqualified from receiving any settlement funds if it were appropriated subject, or if that money's the ability to use it would be subject to legislative appropriation. As you just heard from the commissioner, the consent decree states very clearly that each beneficiary state has to identify a lead agency that's identified by the governor that serves as the custodian for the mitigation trust money that is received by the state, and that agency has to have the legal authority to direct those funds. And in our case, it's MPCA, that's that lead agency that functions as that custodian for those custodial funds. So for one, the agency isn't the one ultimately that's deciding how the money gets spent. It is directed, and how the money is spent is at the direction of the trustees that are appointed by the federal court that set up the mitigation trust fund to begin with. This bill, you know, so the agency could come up with whatever its plan is for how the money should be spent, but the trustees, pursuant to that consent decree, they can accept that plan, they can reject it, they can modify it as they see fit. This bill would conflict with the terms of that consent decree, and I see that as being one of the ways that it might disqualify our state from being an eligible recipient or beneficiary of the money. And then second, it's not clear that the legislature has constitutional authority to appropriate this money to begin with. The state constitution only gives the legislature authority to appropriate money that's held in the state treasury. It's not clear that these custodial funds would in fact necessarily be held in that treasury. There's also a number of statutory exceptions that exist for money that may be held by the executive branch, often in the context of, you know, these kinds of custodial arrangements. You know, there are a number of just legal uncertainties that we have to figure out before passing legislation that would serve as prima facie, I mean, written example of where the agency might be precluded from doing that which the consent decree requires, and that is directing the way the money is spent. So we think it's there are ample opportunities, you know, to consider ways in which the legislature can be involved in decision making around this funding. But, you know, if we shoot ourselves in the foot to begin with, there's nobody is going to benefit from that. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn, I apologize. It appeared I missed your question. I thought that the assistant commissioner had answered it. So if you would like me to call him back, I could go ahead and do that. Otherwise, would you like to have a question now?
Real quick question.
Right now? Okay.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Just to rewind a bit, I was just wondering if the commissioner could just confirm then that the decisions on how to spend the money would be based on science.
Assistant Commissioner.
As opposed to shiny new marketing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to be fair, we haven't put all that together yet, but that would certainly be the way I would go with it, because that's sort of how we roll at the Pollution Control Agency, or at least that's what we try to do.
Thank you.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the testimony that we just heard, but let's make it simpler. The court has essentially set up a grant fund, and it's an administrative agency, the executive branch, that does grants. We, in this committee, sometimes give DNR a hunk of money and say, you can make grants. That becomes then an executive function of the administration. We do not then go back and work with the administration to do those grants. That's not our role. And our Constitution is so crystal clear about that. I think that perhaps since I sit on your committee and enjoy sitting on your committee, maybe we should have a hearing on this right now. That is our role, to talk about what are the criteria that you would like to see, get people to come in and testify what's out there. So it would be an additional public forum. When you said look for alternatives, that would be one. You have the power to convene. But I don't want us to lose this money. And I don't want us to put the very jeopardy from that testimony is excellent. And maybe one of the things the administration could do is give all of us the court order so we could actually read it. The parts that of the court order that are appropriate for us to understand. And maybe then that would kind of settle this. Thank you.
Representative Garofalo, you wish to make a comment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, I agree with you 100%. Number one, that's why the motion before the committee is to refer this bill to our committee. That's exactly the reason why we're here today. Second of all, I don't want to see the money lost either. Agree with you 100%. And third and finally, I don't think there's any risk of us losing this, because all this is saying is it's going to take legislative action. Right? So if the legislature failed to act, then you're correct, there would be a risk of doing that. Nobody in this chamber, and this bill has bipartisan support, no one in this chamber is doing this with the intent of running out the clock and not seeing these funds used. We simply want to make sure that when it comes to the matter of who decides, the legislature is somewhat involved in that decision process. That's it. And so if there's an alternative way to accomplish that, Representative, I'm all ears. That's why we're referring the bill to our committee.
Representative Wiginius.
But our Constitution is crystal clear, and maybe that's one of the things that we have to all sit down and read the Constitution and how it says that what we say in the Constitution, those are the framers, they say what we give to one branch, can that's all that that branch can do, and that branch can do no other. It can do no other. And so we are now trying to take on part of the administrative branch, the executive branch, and the Constitution says, no, you can't do that. So we'll just get the Constitution out and read it together.
I don't think I heard a question there. Is it all right if I move on to the next question?
Yes, but it's just as a matter of record, Mr. Chairman. People should know that under state law right now, settlement money needs to be appropriated by the legislature. That's current law in the state of Minnesota. This path, I believe, was in the late 90s or early 2000s, that the Attorney General cannot, in state law, the branches can't, the legislature has to appropriate the money now, Representative Higgins, but we can move on.
All right, we're trying to get a little, we're getting a little close here. Representative Hansen, last question.
Well, Mr. Chair, and although Representative Garofalo and I were agreeing on something, I do think the bill is risky business, and I'm going to ask for a roll call and oppose the bill.
Roll call being requested.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Wait.
Yes.
What did you want?
What is, can you repeat your... I asked for a roll call, but we do have one person who has a question. Representative Clark had a question. So when a roll call, I did request.
Okay, we're not going to do a roll call right now. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. So the lines that say that it cannot be spent until it's specifically appropriated by law, I think the question that I heard, and I'm not one of the lawyers on the committee here, but I think what seemed pretty clear is that we could run the risk of losing the money because it's going to be happening in between the sessions. What is your, do you have a way of thinking how to approach that differently, or does that concern you? Because that's what seems to be putting us at risk.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, again, there's two separate arguments. One is that we're somehow going to lose the money. The other was that would be delayed because the legislative session is not in fall. It's not occurring in the fall. The second point is a legitimate concern because this requires legislative action, and if we're not in session, I'm not aware of a way that we could take legislative action. But that being said, I still think it's worth it to make sure that we are involved in that process. The legislative branch should be involved in this and should have some decision-making authority over this $47 million.
All right, members. We are going to go ahead and I will re-refer file 1355. I renew my motion to re-refer Job and Energy and Affordability. Roll call being requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Chair Hansen.
Chair votes yes.
Hansen.
No.
Thacker.
Yes.
Thacker Finn.
No.
Bliss.
Yes.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Yes.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hoppy.
Yes.
Weinstein.
No.
Johnson V.
Yes.
Johnson C.
No.
Lehman.
Yes.
Lueck.
Yes.
Neuberger.
Yes.
Sundin.
No.
Svidinsky.
Yeah.
Torkelson.
Yes.
Uglem.
Yes.
Wankinius.
No.
The ayes are 14. The nays are 8. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Torkelson. Which is your honor? I apologize.
So which is it? Sorry, Sandy.
We changed the order. I'm sorry.
You've been up to date.
Representative Torkelson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1466 be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Do you have an amendment?
I do have an amendment that I would like to adopt to get the bill in the shape I would like it. That is the DE2. I would move the DE2.
Members, all those in favor of moving the DE2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative,
thank
your
you,
bill.
Mr. Chair. Here we are again working on buffer legislation. It seems like it's a ongoing process, one that is surprisingly complicated and difficult, but we are making good, steady progress, and this bill will move us a little further down the road. I'll first address the original bill, 1466, that deals with the funding for counties that adopt jurisdiction. You may remember that this initiative was part of last year's pocket veto tax bill, so it did not get signed into law, has been delayed into this biennium, but the initiative remains active and is incorporated into House File 1466. Involves the big change here is that we have incorporated a new formula for the distribution of these funds that's based more closely on the need in the individual counties. There is a minimum and maximum, a minimum of $50,000, a maximum of $200,000 per county. The counties will only receive this money if they do accept jurisdiction and accept the authority to administer this buffer law. The amendment, the DE2, incorporates a number of changes that I am classifying as clarification of the buffer law. Some of it is a result of the delay in funding for the counties, but others, other initiatives, because this is an issue that has surfaced some ongoing problems. First, in the DE2, I'm removing the option for counties to utilize Bowser's APO authority. That was an addition to the original bill that would have allowed counties that adopted jurisdiction to use Bowser's APO authority to issue fines of $500, but the legislation is not clear as to how that $500 would be applied, whether it be daily or weekly or hourly or, you know, it's just totally unclear. And I've not heard from any counties that want to adopt that authority, so, and I don't think they should personally. So this amendment would actually take that option away from them. It does leave the Bowser in there as far as APO authority goes, if they should be required to retain jurisdiction when a county does not authorize jurisdiction. The second change is a language change in the soil loss ordinance that would require counties to approve a local ordinance on soil loss. Next, we have some language that would try to confine the public waters inventory, make sure that we all understand what's on that inventory. Then in addition, further down in the bill, we would divide the public waters inventory into two classes. The one group would have is the group that has a shoreline classification. The other group is a group that does not have shoreline classification. I think the number one complaint I've heard from landowners and operators across the state is that they have what they always thought was a private ditch on their property. Excuse me. And when the buffer maps came out from DNR, they were designated as a public water and would require a 50-foot buffer. That seems unreasonable when across the road or in another place in their neighborhood there's a public ditch that only requires a 16.5-foot buffer. So this is an effort to send a clear message from the legislature that we're not going to be unfair. We're going to balance this out so that ditches and other smaller features on the landscape do not require that 50-foot buffer. It's not my belief that we should be out for a land grab here. This is about improving water quality, not about taking land out of production unnecessarily. It's my understanding that a county that takes jurisdiction would have the authority to properly sort those public waters into the right section if they're improperly classified now. And I think this would make it a lot clearer to landowners and operators just what we expect from them. Next, I'm removing the deadline for November of 2017, which would put us with a single deadline in November of 2018. The delay in getting this county jurisdiction funding in place, the delay in getting alternative practice language from Bowser as far as what their guidance for alternative practices would be, has left farmers with some uncertainty as to what their options are, and to try and push this ahead in this year seems unreasonable. By moving that out to 2018, we have the same deadline for all of the both the ditches and the public waters, and we're still staying within the governor's original goal to have these deadlines in place for 2018. Additionally, there's language in this amendment that requires that funds for establishment of a buffer be in place before buffers are required. And finally, the amendment removes the deadlines for counties to accept jurisdiction. The director of Bowser has testified more than once that the option for counties to accept jurisdiction is something that has no deadline. They can opt in or even opt out of this jurisdiction at their date of their choosing. Mr. Chair, you've gotten older, but I accept you. I accept you the way you are.
Thank you. Put that in the form of a motion. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Torkelson, I'm a bit confused because, you know, we had that long hearing about a month ago, and I thought, and maybe this was in comment or it was in media afterwards, I thought you said you didn't see the need for any more changes to the buffer bill. And maybe I misheard that or misread that, or maybe that was the chair. I don't know. But I thought that you said you didn't see any need for additional changes to the buffer bill.
Was that Torkelson? Was that the younger Torkelson?
That was Representative Torkelson that said that, I think.
Oh, that's right.
Well,
I don't look at this as wholesale changes. I look at this as clarification of the existing law. I'm really not trying to derail this initiative. I'm trying to put it in a fashion that it actually can work.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen,
I have a couple questions on the underlying bill, and I don't know if maybe revenue or you could answer
Representative
those.
Hansen, would you pardon me for just one second? I just want to kind of tee things up here for the testifiers. If Paul Cummings would be on deck here, where is he? There he is. Okay. Just an FYI, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let the author get his coffee there.
Oh.
My question was on the assumption or the county requesting in order to get the aid. So if they get the aid, they accept the responsibility and they get the aid,
mm-hmm.
Is it the revenue department's responsibility to monitor that county would be doing enforcement? Or is it Bowser's responsibility? Who looks over the shoulder to make sure that the money is actually being spent on the tasks that are defined in the law?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. You know, counties have a lot of responsibilities in state government and a lot of mandates that come from state government. I don't see this as being any different. I don't know that I honestly don't know who looks over their shoulder.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Or is it the state auditor that would look, you know, but there's the money issue of, let's say we gave County X $200,000, and they spend it. You can track what they where the dollars went, but is it for is it show up as a line item for administration? My concern is it actually going to get spent for the purpose that we're appropriating it? And particularly when it's an ongoing statutory appropriation beyond just, you know, let's look 10 or 20 or 30 years down the line. If a county is getting $200,000 a year, does it just become part of county aid, or are they going to have people out walking the ditches and measuring? Are they going to be having money that goes from the county to the Salt Water District for technical assistance, or where does that money go that actually will be going for the purpose of implementation and enforcement? And how can the people of Minnesota be assured that if we're putting $10 million into an ongoing appropriation that it's actually going to go for the purpose we want?
Representative Corples.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there will be expenses for the counties involved, no matter whether they, wherever they are on the kind of the spectrum of counties and buffer adaptation. There's ongoing responsibilities to make sure the buffers are in place and to monitor their condition. So I do believe that there's we can justify funding for these counties. I've honestly been wrestling with how long this should stay in place. I think we may see some changes where we have a sunset date on these funds. I think that would be appropriate, and then the future legislature could evaluate whether or not these funds need to be ongoing.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. I think that's a good idea because, as you know, there will be an initial ramp up, and I think some of the counties have already done that ramp up. I think we had testimony that there were some counties that already had 90% compliance. So if we're going to have the counties that are, let's say, less interested or less able or don't have the capacity to do that, and they ramp up, we provide them the state money to do that, you have that initial burst of activity. But I'm very concerned about writing the check in perpetuity because I think there are different tasks that have to be done, and that implementation technical assistance is different than ongoing monitoring and enforcement. But I think that there does need to be money there for enforcement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur. And I will be working on that issue as this bill moves through the process.
Mr. Cummings, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, I feel, especially with the DE amendment, I feel like I've been pushed into the deep end of a pool, so I appreciate your patience today. Reached out to Representative Torkelson yesterday about my comments. Mr. Chair, I'm going to limit my comments to Section 2 of the underlying bill and Section 6 of the DE amendment, and I will be brief. I will note, Mr. Chair, that my colleagues at the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Department of Natural Resources are here to answer questions, especially about the underlying buffer law. In addition, we have staff here at the Department of Revenue if we wanted to talk a little bit more about the aid. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith support the buffer law under current law and also support providing riparian protection aid to counties and watershed districts to assist in the implementation of that law. Counties and watershed districts are partners in ensuring the law works well to protect state water resources from erosion and runoff pollution, stabilize soils, shores, and banks, and protect or provide riparian corridors. This aid recognizes that work by providing state aid for implementation and ongoing monitoring. As the bill moves to the Tax Committee, we want to ensure that the aid and formula meets the needs of the counties and the watershed districts, and we look forward to continued discussions with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson and other interested parties. There's a few differences between this bill's riparian aid and the governor's bill related to riparian aid. Differences I'm sure we can work out as the bill moves along. So I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of the riparian protection aid, and also wanted to just signal our strong support of the buffer law under current law.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. You're welcome anytime. Questions, members?
Didn't sound like it.
Next, Ray Bowen and Jennifer Bergwam. And then after that, we'll have DNR and Bowser. Are you ready? You're on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Members. My name is Jennifer Bergwam, representing the Association of Minnesota Counties, an organization representing all 87 counties in the state. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1466. Thank you also to Representative Torkelson for authoring this legislation. AMC supports and appreciates Section 6, the Riparian Protection Aid for counties and drainage authorities, for counties and watershed districts that opt to enforce the buffer law. Counties are hearing from their constituents that they would like this buffer law enforced at the local level, and we believe this provision will help make that happen on a consistent basis throughout the state. One of AMC's core legislative principles is that we support state budget solutions that avoid adding or shifting costs to counties. We believe this bill will help address the concern of unfunded mandates and support the consistent and statewide implementation and enforcement of the buffer law at the local level. I'll leave my comments there, and I'm open to any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bowen. I represent the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and I too want to thank Representative Torkelson for his continued hard work and thoughtfulness on this issue. Just a couple of quick comments. We obviously support the riparian aid. That's critical for our, I think, our involvement either with the counties and watershed districts. That money is not in our budgets. It will cost money to do, and we would appreciate that support. And I think it will be a great incentive to get districts, to get our districts involved in this enforcement action. One other issue, the APO authority. I guess ambivalent is probably the best word for APO authority. I don't see many, if any, watershed districts accepting that authority because, frankly, we have our own authorities we would much rather operate under, because we have operated under those authorities for years, and we feel more comfortable dealing with our landowners with those authorities than with just strictly fines. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bowen, I think you heard the earlier commentary about some of the counties and some of the watershed districts have already have a high level of compliance here. So how do you reward or not reward folks who've done the stewardship? You know, I think we've got, you know, every local unit of government is different. Some choose to dive in and work on problem solving, and there may be others who, shall we say, are a little slower. What happens at the end of the day if there are people who just don't want to do it, even with the carrot of money? Are we still, you know, 5 years from now going to have a few watershed districts and a few counties who just don't want to implement the law?
Well, Mr. Bowen, Mr. Chairman, you always have the outliers, and you always have the 5 or 3 percenters, no matter what you do. You always have a few. We obviously would spend time, a lot of time with landowners, with the SWCDs. You know, the SWCDs would be spending time with them. We would be spending time with them. We have even issues today where, for example, if we have buffers that we already have on ditches and someone plows up the buffers, we have ways of dealing with that. You know, we basically send them a letter, and 60 days later we say, basically, you replace that buffer. And if they don't, We replace it ourselves, and we assess those costs against that person on the tax rolls. So we have ways of dealing with it, and you know, we ask for cooperation, and I would say invariably get cooperation in the end. But there's always a few where you have outliers, and then you know you do have other remedies. Of course, there's the dispute resolution process that you go through with Bowser, and there's always district court.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bowen, I think that actually describes what's been happening here, that we continue to chase the 5 to 3%, the outliers that you always have. We keep clarifying to meet the 5 to 3%, and those folks who did the work, sometimes without any assistance, but just because it was the right thing to do, kind of look in shock at how much we adapt to meet the 5 to 3%. And you know, even if we pass this bill, I bet you within a year or 2 years we'll be back, we'll have another one to deal with the 5 to 3% who won't deal with that. And that's, I think, what Minnesotans think is just kind of unfair, because it can be in many areas, not just this law.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I think it's very clear that this buffer initiative is affecting much more than a 5 to 3% of landowners and operators. There are many, many folks that are going to be putting in buffers that have not had buffers before, and I would argue with that 5 to 3% figure. We have, you know, you are correct in that the present situation across counties varies dramatically, but it's also true that the landscape of these counties varies dramatically. Some counties don't have much in the line of ditches especially, or even in some counties don't have all that much in the line of rivers and streams, whereas other counties have miles and miles of these features. Some counties have a convoluted landscape, other counties have a flat landscape. That's the reasoning behind trying to drive this jurisdiction down to the county level so that they can properly address the situation in each county. And it's my objective to incentivize counties as much as possible to take this work on. You're also correct that some counties have been more aggressive than others. Why, I can't tell you, but the objective of this is to incentivize counties to take action and get this work done.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. I think you're acknowledging that there were counties that before the law that passed had taken the initiative by their local elected officials to do this. Freeborn County, where I grew up, was one of those. Dakota County, where I live now, is another. There were other rural counties that were doing it. And I think part of the reason the buffer law came into being is there were some counties that just would never take the action. Again, we deal to the 3 to 5%. So I want to be clear when I'm speaking about here. We've had testimony that we've had, I think Dakota County was at 94, 95%. Maybe Mr. Jashke can give us updated numbers when he comes down. So there are counties that have hit that. There are counties that are going to, again, whether they don't have ditches or whether they're more riparian areas or public waters, there is a huge diversity in the state. But looking at the counties that took the initiative, they were diverse counties as well. So it is going to take time. I think your earlier acknowledgement that you don't want to have the dollars go out forever. I think it's also important to acknowledge that we provided money. We're providing money for buffer assistance, and if we have CREP, if we fully fund the Conservation Reserve Enhancement, that'll also provide assistance for landowners. Those programs also provide some cost share so that the landowner, and I'm a landowner, I'm not a homestead landowner, but I'm a landowner, the landowners can have some cost. That's what's been great about our programs, the landowner and the cost share coming from whether federal, state, or local dollars. It's a joint participation in making the water quality better. if we have 100% pickup by the government, I think you lose that skin in the game to make sure that you're actually having implementation and maintenance occur by the land. And again, worry that clarification actually leads to not having implementation on some things that would help protect water quality and the landowner.
Comment, Representative Parker?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. You know, the objective is to get full cooperation, but to just, you know, any farmer who is taking land out of production certainly has skin in the game, well beyond the cost of implementation. You're taking a chunk of my farm that is my livelihood and saying I can't farm it anymore. If that's not skin in the game, I don't know what is.
Thank you. Just a second, please. DNR and Bowser, I'm going to get you guys down here. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the concern that Minnesotans have is that there is another cost, and that's the cost of water quality cleanup. So when costs are externalized and other people have to pick up those costs, whether through drinking water treatment or through other costs that are being paid, then Minnesotans who are not the landowners then are picking up taxes, cost share, implementation, and the externalized cleanup costs. Those cleanup costs for treating water and the cost of the environmental accumulated degradation, both on water quality and wildlife, those are costs that don't come into this discussion. We're only talking about the cost of the landowner. And other people pick up the externalized costs involved in production. That we never talk about. We never talk about that. We just pay it. And that's where the challenge comes in, I think, in doing things differently than what we've always done before, to acknowledge there are other costs here rather than just the cost of the landowner.
Well, Representative Hansen, I've been here for a little over 6 years. We talk about this frequently. And to say that we never talk about the external costs, I think, is not an accurate statement. Testifiers, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Thank you. Proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to briefly testify in this file 1466. Thank you for the development and the inclusion of the riparian aid provisions. This piece, which is also supported by the governor, will enable the compliance and the enforcement of this law to be administered locally, which has been the intention of the current law as well. We do want to note that the proposed deadline extension is already covered in the current law in that if a landowner applies for assistance on public waters, there is a one-year extension for that public waters implementation. As we review the DE amendment and the corrective actions, we also wanted to note potential concerns with changes that would add an unknown fiscal component to the bill language and the potential then to decrease the effectiveness of this law. We've been working very closely and cooperatively with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, the Watershed Districts, and the counties to understand and implement this law. And we look forward to continuing to work with you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson to implement and to look at these amendments and this proposed change. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Sarah Stroman, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Natural Resources.
Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 1466 and the DE amendment. I am not going to reiterate the testimony from my other colleagues here, other than to say DNR is also supportive of the aid to counties, and we share the issues raised by Bowser in Ms. Becker-Kadelka's testimony. What I'd like to just briefly talk about is in Section 4 of the bill and the change regarding the public waters requirement and the need that have the public waters have a shoreline classification to fall into the 50-foot buffer category. Our technical folks are still working on analysis, but preliminarily, our understanding is that this would potentially remove about 48,000 miles of buffers from the 50-foot requirement category to the 16.5-foot category. I think it's also important to note that this category of shoreline class not having a shoreline classification includes both the altered public waters or the private ditches that Representative Torkelson was referencing, as well as natural watercourses. And we don't have a good way to distinguish between those categories in our GIS mapping exercise. So to distinguish between those categories would be a much larger effort. I think it's also important to note that many of the watercourses that fall into that category, whether altered or natural, are in the headwaters, which, as we know, is an important area for water quality. So we will be potentially affecting the outcome here. Lastly, on a positive note, what I would say is that the law already allows for alternative practices. And so if a landowner is in that situation where they have a private ditch and they are on a public water, they have an option to do a buffer less than 50 feet through the alternative practices mechanism. We know there's much more conversation to occur on this bill. We've appreciated the discussion thus far and look forward to continuing to work with Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for your testimony. I represent Nicola County, which has a lot of farmers, and I want to make sure I'm understanding the situation well. First of all, my first question relates to compliance. I recall from the hearing that we had over in the Capitol that there's over 90% compliance so far. Can you help me with that?
With testifiers. Ms. Goodelka.
Mr. Chair and members, so the compliance, the preliminary compliance that the Soil and Water Conservation Districts compiled is done by county, and so this is their first look, their first review that they did in January. And so the percentages vary for Nicollet County and Blue Earth. Let me just look and see here. So Blue Earth and Nicollet, I think, were over 50%. Yep, 54%. And that doesn't mean that the rest are non-compliant. It just simply means that it's hard to tell on a satellite or area photo if it's 16.5-foot or not. So that means that it's just an additional verification or check would be needed. I think in the chair's district, Roseau was 82% compliant. So the compliance ones will vary by county, and some of them are done, some of them are well over 90%, and some of them are less.
My question is really statewide what the compliance is.
We don't,
Ms. Goodelka.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, we don't have the statewide aggregate. So because of the very first cut at this was done with just those simple overlays, so we don't have the statewide aggregate. I could look and see if we could pull together that.
Johnson.
Then also my question is more on the, you know, I'm well aware there's a lot of questions. A lot of farmers have questions about whether this is a public ditch or a public water or a private water ditch. There's that set of questions, and then whether they really need to, given the topography, need the buffer. You talked about an application to delay. If there's this confusion or this misunderstanding, I'd like to hear from both of you how Bowser sees that. If there is an applicant, I want to know more about what a farmer can do to delay if there is a disagreement, and whether they have access to some sort of delay, both from the views of Bowser and implementation and from the DNR in terms of the map.
To the test buyers.
Mr. Chair and members, it's a good question. The options are there both from the alternative practices standpoint. So if a landowner feels like a 50-foot buffer does not meet his or her needs on that piece of land, and so we've heard a couple of specific ones, like on a ditch where there might be a spoil that comes up, and so it's really, you know, the idea of water doesn't go uphill, that there are alternative practices that landowner could implement, such as buffering to stabilize the bank, but then wherever the water does have an intake, to buffer around that or to have some sort of conservation tillage practice. And so options there to help meet the needs of the landscape and the landowner to achieve the law and the intent of the law. As far as if there's a delay or if there's an addition, I think is what you're asking about, to the November 1st, 2017 deadline, if a landowner applies for financial assistance, then that landowner is given a one-year extension to November 1st, 2018. And that one-year extension is so that the financial assistance process can go through. Then they can come, so it might be they might have applied for, let's say, a federal program, like the Conservation Reserve Program, or the CREP program, that they may have applied for a program, and if that funding isn't available on November 1 of 2017, it would offer a year for them to be able to go through that program.
Representative Johnson.
Specific to that, thank you, Mr. Chair. The CRP money's out in a lot of spots, so if there's not money available, how does the farmer apply for that financial assistance?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair and members, so that was one example, and you're right, CRP is declining and declining nationally and in the state. Other things could be state cost share dollars, so they could be state cost share programs. There could be the federal-state combination of the Federal Conservation Reserve Program. So if a landowner goes into a soil and water conservation district and says, I would like to have financial assistance, I'd like to apply for financial assistance to help me with my buffer law implementation, they would go through that work locally and then have that one-year extension, that one-year waiver until November 1 of 2018.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm also thinking about the CREP that was announced about a month ago. And I'm a natural optimist. I'm hopeful that this legislature will provide the funding to match. Assuming that does happen, would that apply as well?
Ms. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair, members, yes. The CREP has three practices, of which one is buffers, and the idea is that would be applicable to landowners who are interested in doing that kind of protection.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And then I'd like to hear about the mapping.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson. So just taking one step back on the mapping, we have been taking comments from landowners through the soil and water conservation districts, the watershed districts, and the counties since last spring. We have well over 4,000 comments that have been received, and we have made probably nearly 3,000 changes to the map as a result of that. You saw some examples of that in the hearing when Director Colvin, Deputy Director Colvin from our Ecological and Water Resources Division testified. We are this week releasing our last scheduled update to the map that will include this last round of comments we got. We will continue to accept comments and change requests, and we will re-update the map on some schedule. At this point, frankly, the comments are trickling off, so we don't know what that schedule will be, but we will make it at some regular interval respective to the number of comments that we are receiving. I think at this point, there are still a number of things that require additional review. Those are marked on the map so that the SWCDs, the counties, and the watershed districts, when they go to do the implementation and enforcement, they can clearly see what is still under review by the DNR. And I believe they have flexibility under the law to delay, penalty or an enforcement under that based on the pending category on the map. So that would be our view of how the map and the implementation and the enforcement would work together.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking a lot of questions, but this is pretty important to my constituents. If I heard you correctly, we're still looking at about 1,000 disagreements or questions about the mapping. And I think I just heard you that there would be allowance for delay on that. So if there's not a resolution of a set of that thousand for which there's still disagreement, come November 2017, are they able to delay the implementation of the buffer because of that disagreement?
Ms. Goldman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, so let me be clear on the math of how you got to 1,000 comments.
Okay. I was checking my math.
Well, no, you did your math correctly, but I should be clear that
all of the difference between the comments received and the changes we've made. Some of those are still under review and perhaps in disagreement or just under review. Some of those, frankly, are things we looked at and said we don't need to make a change, that it was simply someone might have made a comment saying the boundary of that water course is shifted slightly on the ground. It's our understanding, in fact, the way we've communicated, the buffer goes where the water is, not the specific line on the map. The map is not that precise to indicate the precise location of the buffer. So if they were very slight placement issues, we simply noted the comment and said, well, the buffer will go where it is. So I just want to be clear that not that entire 1,000 number are changes yet to be made. Some of them just don't need to be made. With respect to the delay, and I mean, this really, I think, because the implementation and enforcement is up to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to do the implementation and then the counties and the watershed districts to do the enforcement, this is my perspective. They may want to weigh in on this. But if the DNR map is showing that something is still under review, I don't think they could determine whether someone is in compliance or not because the map is not indicating whether a buffer is required or not. So my point is there would be no enforcement for them to do at that point until that issue was resolved. And so, you know, the landowner would receive a delay of implementation until that particular issue was resolved.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I would like to hear from Bowser, based on the testimony from the DNR. Can you be flexible in those situations?
Director Cadell.
Mr. Chair and members, we agree with the DNR in that if a particular segment of, let's say, a public water is under review and it's something that's under review locally or under review with the DNR, that at that point it makes sense not to move forward in a compliance action because it's the under review part is the purpose or the reason for the delay. So it's part of that. And so we agree with the DNR's testimony on this matter.
Just one quick comment. I think I'm hearing what I want to hear, and that is that there's legitimate issues of questions of the countryside on this. And I believe I'm hearing from both agencies that there's room to move, there's room to be flexible, and I would certainly hope that's true regardless. And I would hope that you are able to implement that so it's done in a rational manner. Thank you.
Spoken like a true bestie. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Backer's got the A3 amendment.
Yeah, Chair and members, what A3 amendment does, it really clears up what it means for the county to take jurisdiction. We really want to inform Bowser that the county has that jurisdiction because if you look in the bill, how the commissioners of revenue sends the money to the counties is as they need to be informed that jurisdiction has been taken from the county. So it clears that up. There's to make it much clearer, and that's what that amendment does.
So, Representative Back, would you like to move your bill?
Oh, you know what? You are correct. Thank you. Yes, I would like to move on A1 amendment. Yes.
Thank you.
A3, excuse me. A3, yes.
Absolutely. Good catch. Discussion to the amendment. All those. Any discussion? I know. I'm waiting. A couple of people. Okay. Discussion to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Thatcher. And if you'd like to move your A2 amendment.
Yes, Chair members, I'd like to move my A2 amendment.
Can I speak on it, Chair?
Please. What this does is it, we want to help maintain water quality, but it really clears up not taking productive land out of production. We had a testifier from Johnson, Minnesota, Mr. Scott Gillespie, when we had that joint hearing over at the Capitol, and he talked about his area, his grandparents, and, you know, he also talked about that you could see a dog running 3 miles away and so forth. This is not his land, but this gives a good example of this is classified. I'm only using this as an example. This goes up and down the Red River Valley, especially in my area. This is classified as a public water course. It's still classified. Now, the DNR on this particular piece did remove the classification to do buffers, but we have a lot of these lands. This does not need to be buffered. And Scott's a good example. I just got another call from Stevens County. I get this constantly. So what this does is it just clarifies that we cannot be taking productive land like this out and buffering it. So that's what A2 does. Thank you for hearing that.
Thank you. Discussion. I think Representative Fisher is on first. Actually, he has his hand up
before. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fisher. I would oppose the A2 amendment. It essentially guts the bill. You know, that these clarifications that we're talking about are not clear. They're significant changes. And this is significant change to the public waters law. And Representative Backer said that his evidence, they actually went to the local Soil and Water District and got the correction. So we're using one example, referenced other examples, to have a dramatic change, a long-time existing law. But that's my expectation of what's going to happen here. More and more clarifications that keep making changes to nullify the effect of the law. So don't support it. Significant problems with it.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little concerned about the wording in here. When we talk about running continually for 12 months a year, I know that particularly when we get into drought conditions in the state, there are times where certain streams and certain rivers that are public waters aren't flowing 12 months a year. They're only running partially. And I don't see any kind of protection or anything that would define those kind of situations. So I have some concerns along that. And I've even seen rivers as large as the Mississippi. In 87 in St. Cloud, Mississippi, at the business I worked at where the river was going by, wasn't running at a certain point. So does that mean, because it's not always running 12 months a year, year round, that means that would no longer be a public water? That's a question I have.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question and a comment. Does the author of the amendment know, and maybe Representative Torkelson, do you know how much land is taken out? I think you were very careful earlier to give numbers, your witnesses to give numbers on what land was, the acreage that was being removed. What do we know about this amendment?
Representative Backer, Representative Torkelson.
Go ahead. You know, again, the purpose of this is this land does not need to be buffered. These people are farming through the land, so buffering does no improvement at all because there's no water that's running through this area. So to give you a specific amount, I don't know, but this is where the law outsteps its boundary and really hurts family farms across the western part of Minnesota.
President Parkinson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This language is fairly new. I just saw it for the first time last night. I honestly don't know exactly what the complete impact of it is, but it does send a message that we need to consider these important issues. I would suggest we put this language on, and I pledge to clarify it in the next round of changes.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we don't even know the acreage we're talking about, seems kind of reckless. If we don't even know the acreage we're talking about, it seems to me a little bit reckless to put this on, and I would hope that author of the bill would say, at least we're not going to do it in this committee. it just seems we should have that information. And let me just also comment that, earlier it was said there are these external costs, Mr. Chairman, I think you correctly said sometimes we do have discussions about some of them, but not all. And one of the areas that's really left out, and that is me a lot, is the whole area of the public health. And the reason partly why we have protection by clean water is so that we protect human beings and animals, but mostly our families' public health. And as a person who grew up in southwestern Minnesota, where the issue of public health of the waters that are being contaminated affects the public health, my family and others who are still there. So, you know, I just am concerned that we don't be reckless about what we're doing here, first of all, and second, that we keep that in mind, that clean water has a lot to do. Most of our body is made up of water. It's a public health issue as well as a farming issue. I care about farming a lot, do farming in my spare time. I just do not want to be reckless about this and leave out this issue of what water means to us. So it's only about having, you know, more acres to farm. It's also to make sure that those acres and water that flows through them are protected.
Thank you. Well, Representative Clark, this is the committee where we would be discussing this. So Representative Swedzinski has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just more of a comment. I think for the language you use, we talk about it being reckless. I'm wondering how many acres this is. These are privately owned acres. I think that's, you know, there's a lot of consternation with this amendment and potentially what it would do. But I think you always need to remember that, you know, these are lands and acres that people are making payment on. You know, if this was a conversation about, when it comes to the buffer program, of basically had a carrot and said, hey, State of Minnesota wants to encourage landowners who owned this land maybe for 100 years and said, hey, we'd like you to participate in this program. You know, we're trying to fix, you know, a mistake and saying, you know, there are some other options. There are some real concerns out there. It's not reckless to try to protect property rights.
Thank you. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Just a couple of points here. The segment that Representative Backer raised has been removed from the map. That landowner did go through the process with the SWCDs, and that piece of segment that was mapped has been removed from the map. So that's no longer
going to be required. And he said that in his testimony.
I just want to make sure that people understood that. Second of all, the amendment before you, the A2, I don't know how the department would actually do this. I mean, trying to go through it with our GIS system and coming up with publicly named lakes, rivers, sloughs, rivers, creeks, which have water in them running continually for 12 months a year, this would require a complete remapping. A huge delay in the process, and the administration does not support the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to follow up on Representative Swedzinski, because if we look back a few years ago when we had the smoking ban debate, we heard the same arguments, and it goes back to what Representative Clark was saying, is that public health, the legislature and the executive branch do take action to protect public health. And so I think the base bill here was looking at some form of compensation to the localities to ensure that there's the enforcement there for public health. I think that we're seeing, you know, efforts for cost share. I mean, we didn't provide cost share to the restaurants and bars to come into compliance with the smoking ban, but we're willing here to provide cost share to the landowners. So they had the same type of cost of compliance, but we did that because of the protection for public health. I think it's important for Minnesotans to know, I think this, this amendment we're voting on was printed at 1 o'clock yesterday. I don't know if it was posted until like 6:30 or 7 last night, 6:30 p.m. last night. So I can understand, Commissioner Meyer, if you can't determine it, because here we are at a 8:15 in the morning committee with things that were posted for Minnesotans to see and evaluate. I'm guessing most folks haven't had a chance to look at it. We did come in early this morning to try to walk through some of this. But reckless, I think, Representative Clark, is the word of the day. Reckless is the word of the day, as we keep clarifying with significant changes. This is a really significant change, and I'm sure it's not the last.
Thank you. Representative Backer.
In re- regards with this motion, I will move to withdraw it just and work with the author. One of the things I want to say is with this motion here, it is reckless for taking private land out that doesn't have no water. My constituents have a livelihood, and what the state has done with these situations, and I have worked with a lot of these individuals who want to take their land out of the public water inventory, and it is a pain in the butt to work with the DNR to do it. I have another person call me yesterday, so I will withdraw it. I respect the author to work on this because I do respect Representative Torkelson, but this is a challenge, and for people to sit around here saying that this is reckless, your statement is reckless also. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baxter. I would agree wholeheartedly. These things never should have been on the maps in the first place.
Amen.
Next, the amendment has been withdrawn. I'd like to have Mark Tin, and Lely Fatahi. Excuse me if I've gotten your names wrong. I apologize. We need to move another bill yet today, so if you could keep your comments brief, I would be very appreciative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's Mark Tenike representing the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. First, I just be quick today, but I'll start with thanking the governor for the buffer initiative and for Representative Torkelson and for this committee for working 2 years to try to implement and make the buffer law work. I have four things I want to say today, and I'll say them quickly. Some of them have been covered. But first, we're encouraged that the buffer program is working. The numbers may be a bit in dispute, the numbers between the counties, but it seems to be up over 80% in almost everyone's estimation. So that's it's a good start. Secondly, it's a good start, I think, because of the work that the counties and the watershed districts have done. And they are key to implementing the law down the road, and we support the money in Senator and Representative Torkelson's bill to go to the counties, the watershed districts, and the soil and Bowser. We do have a couple of concerns. They've been addressed, but I want to highlight them.
In, so could the testifier please, are the concerns to the DE amendment or to the to the bill?
Well, I want to mention both. That's
Mr. If you would stick to the DE, please. That's the bill. Okay. I just want to make sure that we're focusing on the bill that's before us.
Mr. Chairman, I think the concern about the DE amendment is similar to the one about the change in the Tier 1 and Tier 2 in the bill itself. Both is the concern is that we don't really know the acres. We haven't seen the map. We're working on some GIS ourselves, but concern in both cases is that the amendments may cut too broadly, that they may go beyond the intended purpose, and that I think they cut into concerns that we, from our perspective, that we get 50 foot of buffer on as much public water as will work, and we've got the DNR appeal process and the Bowser appeal process. So the concern really on the D2 amendment is the same as on the underlying bill. We need to see the difference between the current DNR mapping and the acres that would be affected by both of these changes. So that was the one comment. My other comment is really not to the D2 amendment, but I would say that, I think it is relevant. The point that Representative Hansen made about cost share, I think we at MCEA and I think in the conservation community look at cost share as the appropriate approach to this. So to amend the law to require 100% state or federal funding before the enforcement or compliance is required. We think again that may cut too broadly, and I think we would oppose that addition at the current time. Look forward to discussion on both of these issues with the author, with Representative Parkinson down the road. But those are two real concerns from our perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Ms. Patahi.
Chair Fabian, members of the committee, it's Trevor Russell. I'm testifying on behalf of Leila Fahy, and I'll speak as quickly as I can. We have, with Friends of the Mississippi River, we're a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and restoring the Mississippi River in Minnesota. We do have a couple concerns with the DE amendment as posted. We do support Section 6. LGUs that have assumed jurisdiction do need the resources to properly enforce the buffer requirements. We would have loved to see that money available in 2017. As soon as we can get the money to those LGUs, let's do that. We do have concerns about some of the other sections. Section 1, if LGUs have accepted enforcement authority and the money that comes with it, we don't see a reason to strip the ability of those LGUs to deploy APO authority. I remind members that we've had a buffer law in place, a 50-foot buffer setback on public waters since 1989, and that's been somewhat inconsistently enforced from county to county, and one of the reasons for that is those counties lacked APO authority. So they were required to go through a lengthy and inconvenient judicial process to be able to enforce that, and that's why APO authority was brought into this bill in the first place, is to allow, in essence, a parking ticket rather than a legal process for enforcing that 50-foot buffer. If we withdraw local government ability to deploy that APO authority, and they do in the future accept jurisdiction, then they're required to go through this lengthy legal process to enforce that buffer rule, and that's part of why the longstanding buffer rule we've had in place hasn't been as effective or easy to enforce as we'd like. We do know most people already have their buffers in, but for the few folks that don't want to, using that APO authority at the local level was determined as a useful, good tool rather than having the state enforce or having to go through a legal process. So we'd like to see that remain in the bill. Our other concern, Mr. Chair, briefly, is the shoreline classification. This provision would exclude public waters from the 50-foot buffer requirement if they don't have a shoreline classification. County shoreline classification is a zoning provision. It's not a water quality provision. It wasn't in the original bill. The word shoreline classification were never in the buffer law. The DNR suggests that that provision could remove up to 48,000 miles of streams from that 50-foot buffer protection. Given that from the limited data that we have, it appears that in many counties, most of those buffers are already in place. Applying a new test, shoreline classification or not, would remove maybe 48,000 miles of streams from needing those buffers. This may potentially result in 50-foot buffers that are in now coming back out. And we don't see how that would advance water quality in Minnesota.
Thank you.
We have some concerns about delaying the implementation. I'll be brief. And we would maybe request we could lay this over and have further conversations with the author and chairs and stakeholders and make sure we get this right before
Thank
we
you.
Launch this chair.
Thank
you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming there will be a fiscal note written as it's been changed, but I would ask for a roll call on this bill.
Roll call having been requested on House File 1466 as amended to be referred to taxes. Roll call being requested. The chair votes aye.
Hansman.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Becker.
Aye.
Beckerton.
No.
Bliss.
Yes.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Eklund.
No.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yeah.
Hoppy.
Aye.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson B.
Aye.
Johnson C.
No.
Raymond.
Yes.
Lewick.
Aye.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Sundin.
No.
Swiginski.
Aye.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Ugram. Wagenius.
No.
There being 14 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails. You're off to taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll save my closing speech for next time.
What's that?
I'll save my closing speech for next time.
I know that.
Chair. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you allow me just a second here, I was going to ask a rhetorical question, but I'm going to pass on that. But there's been several comments on that bill about, you know, people have been farming their land for 100 years, and it's a pain in the butt to deal with this land grab. That term has been used a few times quite loosely. I did get a call from a farmer, and not from my district, but he was adamant about killing the buffer restrictions, or the buffer bill completely. And he reminded me that we took this land from the Indians fair and square 200 to 300 years ago, and God damn it, this is nothing but a federal land grab. That's the way he framed it. I was just wondering if there was anybody from the Native American communities that could weigh in on this at some time. Thank you.
Thank you. We have before us House File 1547. Representative Lehman, would you to be your motion will be to refer to. I'll move the bill for you, Representative Lehman, to House File 1547 to be referred to taxes. To your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We will move this very quickly. We all know that our forest lands make up over 40, our private forest lands make up over 40% of Minnesota's forest area. So it's really important that those private landowners manage their forests for productive use. And the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act does just that. It's been a popular program, but not a perfect program. The Minnesota Forest Resources Council stakeholder group met and issued a report. The legislative auditor likewise issued a report, came up with several suggestions, and my bill that's before you today addresses those suggestions. Just briefly, the OLA report talked about the roles of the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources and bringing the DNR into more of a management oversight role. The OLA report also addressed establishing a tiered system based on the type of land and the length of public benefits provided. So House File 1547 incorporates those recommendations as to the process of the program, the roles between the DNR and the Department of Revenue. It also creates a tiered system based on years of enrollment, providing public access to the lands, and differentiates whether or not the lands have conservation easements. This is a complex issue, I have learned, and lots of stakeholders to take into consideration. DNR and Department of Revenue, small and large landowners, people interested in access for recreation, people interested in maintaining a working forest land. So I would just like to conclude by telling you or reminding you that this bill actually was in last year's tax bill that was vetoed, and only the dates have been changed. I have a couple of folks here to testify. Wayne Brandt is up first and can give you a little more detail on the bill. Thank you.
Wayne Brandt, Minnesota Forest Industries, Minnesota Timber Producers. In the interest of time, I was going to do something I've never done in testifying and quote from the purpose section. I won't do that, but it's really pretty good in explaining what this program is about. We support this legislation. Appreciate Representative Lehman's efforts. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lehman, you did say this is a complex issue, and Mr. Brandt, I think this was, is this the same bill as was introduced last year?
Mr. Brandt.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanson, yes, I believe it's identical to what was last year, other than the dates have been changed.
Representative Hanson. And Mr. Chair, how closely does it align with the legislative auditor's recommendations?
Mr. Brandt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I believe that all, I don't know if every one, but the legislative auditor's report spoke pretty extensively to the roles between DNR and revenue, and also verification that enrollees were doing what they did. This bill addresses all of those areas.
Representative Hanson.
And Mr. Chair, and I see Mr. Cummings is up there, and I think he could, you know, this is going to taxes, and maybe that discussion. I'm I'm cautious about moving this on. I think it is a complex bill and very significant, you know, but there may be some time here where on the floor we have some questions if they're not resolved in taxes. I do need to state for the record, I do have land in SFIA, so I'm going to disclose that I have property that is enrolled. But when I've checked on these things in the past, that it's for disclosure, not recusal. So I want to make sure that was on the record.
Thank you. Mr. Cummings, quickly, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I wanted to thank Representative Lehman for carrying this bill today. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith support House File 1548, a bill making many updates to the Sustainable Forest Act to the extent that they reflect what was in last year's tax bill that was passed but was not enacted. Over the summer and fall, the Department of Revenue and the Department of Natural Resources found some technical and administrative updates to the language. As this bill moves to the Tax Committee, we will look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, and other stakeholders on those updates. We wanted to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this will be a rhetorical question. I plan on supporting this bill, Representative Lehman, but you mentioned all the stakeholders that weighed in on this. I was just wondering if the original owners of the forests weighed in on it.
Thank you for your questions. Rhetorical. Representative Eckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your Representative Lehman. I, too, own land in this that's enrolled in SFIA, so for disclosure. And it's a good bill. We'll keep private landowners open to the public. So thank you.
Seeing no further questions, I'll renew the motion to re-refer House File 1547 to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? Well, the motion prevails.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.